Hey there, Quajo here, and if you haven't heard my voice, I'm the new host of the Art of Online Business. Quick update on my new offer. I did not expect the initial launch spots to sell out so fast. I'm talking about Facebook Ad Setup to Success, which is one-on-one Facebook ads coaching for the driven course creator from me, three Zoom calls within a month, and unlimited support in between so that you can run your lead generation campaigns, your launch campaigns, your SLO, self-liquidating offer funnels, exactly like I would, getting all my tips and tricks and strategies, plus just unlimited support inside of Slack or Voxer, or one lady's even doing it from inside of Messenger, screen recordings, Loom recordings, this sort of thing, questions. This is what I'm doing, but all those limited spots at the initial launch price, they are gone. And I just wanted to explain that out of integrity to the people who took those first spots. The price has gone up, and there's one spot, maybe two, if I do some scheduling jujitsu for May. Otherwise, we're booking into June. You can click on the link in the description below to find out more, or you can go to theartofonlinebusiness.com/call if you need that kind of one-on-one Facebook help. All right, back to the episode.
I wrote the book because I feel like most of the entrepreneurship advice out there today is wrong or doesn't apply to me because it's written by single dudes who have no responsibilities except for work, right? And everywhere I go, I see people just preaching that you got to hustle, you got to work 80 hours a week. And that doesn't apply to me, right? Because I want to spend time with my family. And so I wrote the book to just teach people that it doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to work 8 hours a week. You don't have to hustle your butt off just to get ahead. Most of us who start businesses, and I'll ask you this question too, Rick, we do it just for freedom, really, right?
Yep.
We're not trying to start the next $100 million company or next $1 billion company. We just want to spend time with our loved ones and just have a little bit of freedom.
Yep.
And if that's what you want, then it can be easily achieved. You just have to set boundaries.
Hey, what's up, my friends? Rick here. Welcome to today's episode on the podcast. I'm really excited about today's guest today. Steve Chu, I've known him for years. He's been on the podcast here before a couple times, but it's been several years since he's been on. And Steve runs two very successful online businesses. One is an e-com business where he sells handkerchiefs, which we talk about here on the podcast today. And then his other business is called My Wife Quit Her Job. And that is a teaching business. He's got courses and so forth. And he's got a very popular podcast, YouTube channel. He and his wife have two teenage kids. And he's written this book called The Family First Entrepreneur. And as you know, this is a message that is very near and dear to me because Steve has built the business that he has, the two businesses that he has, while still being able to take plenty of time for his family and his friends and, you know, his health and so forth. And, you know, as you know, probably by now, I'm on sabbatical right now. And I explained it all in episode number 697 from a couple weeks ago. But yeah, this is such an important topic. And I'm so glad that, you know, when Steve reached out to let me know he'd written this book, I was like, absolutely, come on the show. Let's talk about this. It's such an important topic. And as you're going to hear, the first half of the book is for somebody who has yet to start a business, you know, starting a side hustle. And the second half of the book, which we talk a lot about here today, is for those of you who have businesses already, how to create more systems and processes and automation in the business. And so we dive into all that here today. Really, really great discussion with Steve. So without further ado, let's go hang out with Steve Chu. Steve, I should have checked before we hit record here when you were last on the podcast, because it has been years.
Good Lord, I don't even remember.
Like years. Like I told you before we started recording, I'm like, yeah, we're, you know, 700 episodes in. You're like, 700 yeah. episodes. I know. I feel it's to say that out loud is like, it's a lot. It's a lot of episodes. What are you up to on your show?
450 or something. Let me see. I know what I'm at. Check.
When you get into the several hundreds, that's a lot.
I'm at 453.
Nice. Nice.
So you do more than one a week?
Yeah, I've been doing two per week. I do a Wednesday and a Friday for years now. I don't want to take credit for it, but I was one of the early ones to do a quick tip. That's like a quick tip Friday. So yeah. But yeah, 700 and something episodes. It's nuts. So since it's been a while since you've been on the show, I'd love to have you reintroduce yourself to my audience here.
Yeah. So my name is Steve Chu. I run an e-commerce store with my wife selling handkerchiefs over at bumblebeelinens.com. And I also teach e-commerce over at mywifequitterjob.com. I've run a podcast since 2016 called My Wife Quit Her Job. It's got 453 episodes. I also have a YouTube channel, which has over 200K subs teaching e-commerce. And I also run an annual e-commerce conference called the Seller Summit, which I've run for the past 7 years.
So you're not busy at all.
It actually isn't that much, Rick, as long as you repurpose a lot of your content. I mean, we talk about that today too.
And you have two kids.
I have two kids. Yes. They're teenagers now though. So they're a little bit older than yours.
Wait, they are? I didn't know that.
They're teenagers now, right? It's been a long time.
Holy cow. I mean, we're going to be talking about that and your new book today. I was when I found out about the book, I was like, yes, wholeheartedly yes on this topic, because, you know, when this episode comes out, I'm on sabbatical, and it's a topic very near and dear to my heart. I would love for you, before we dive into that discussion, I actually use your example of how you sell handkerchiefs by, you know, your marketing. You're not just marketing handkerchiefs. You're talking about other things that somebody who would want to be buying handkerchiefs would have interest in. And I use that example a lot, actually, in talking to accelerators and stuff like that. So can you just share real quick, like, what your sort of primary marketing strategy is for the business?
So if you think about it this way, when I say I sell handkerchiefs, it sounds kind of dull, right? You're like, hey, what am I going to do with this piece of cloth? But if you just take something ordinary and you frame it in a different way, it makes it much easier to sell. So we sell handkerchiefs for weddings, where you can have the bride and groom and the wedding date embroidered on the handkerchief. We sell handkerchiefs for funerals. We sell handkerchiefs for baptisms. And as soon as you frame it in a certain way, people are like, oh, I get it. I want one for my wedding, or I want one for my baptism, and that sort of thing.
Yeah. And don't you also create content? So for like around weddings, for example, like other wedding related content.
We do. So the idea with the content is not necessarily to attract people interested in handkerchiefs, but to attract the type of people who would buy our products, right? So I guess the bottom of the funnel articles that we write are ones that are like, you know, wedding gifts for the bride or the best groomsman gifts and that sort of thing. People are ready to buy and they see that piece of content, and we purposely list our products, obviously, at the top, in addition to other products. And that stuff ranks in Google, generates a ton of traffic, and it leads to sales.
Are you getting, I'm just curious, do you get affiliate revenue on any of the other products that you're recommending?
Yes. Yeah. So for things that we can't find a direct affiliate program for, we just use Amazon.
Yeah.
But most stores these days actually have an affiliate program, and you can get, for physical products, it's usually around 10 to 15%.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's super smart. And it's that, what you just described, is what I share as an example for a lot of people, is like, you're selling handkerchiefs, but you know your target audience so well. So it's not like you're just creating content around handkerchiefs. You're actually creating content around, like, you know, bridal gifts or, you know, wedding planning or that type of stuff. So it's not always a specific direct connection.
And I don't know when the last time we talked, but we probably talked like a decade ago. I'm not sure. But since then, we've actually been focusing a lot more also on repeat business. And you would think that, you know, people who shop for wedding handkerchiefs don't buy more than once, right? I know the divorce rate is high in this country, but most likely they're not. But it turns out that our repeat customer rate is about 12%, which is kind of low for a store.
Yeah.
But those people generate 36% of our annual revenue. And here's why.
Oh, wow.
I was looking through our customer list, and I noticed that there were people who were buying an unusually large amount of linens. Like people who are buying like 100 handkerchiefs, that's not normal. People who are buying 40 dozen napkins, that's not normal. So I actually got on the phone with them and I said, hey, I just noticed you guys ordered a lot. What do you guys do? And it turns out they're event and wedding planners. And so now what I do is I literally go down the list and it's actually automatically extracted now. For people who purchase an unusually large amount, we get on the phone and we just say, hey, here's a coupon code. Here's a dedicated rep so that whenever you need something, we'll make sure it gets there. And then we get those customers for life and they buy often, they buy in large quantity.
Super smart. I love it. Another lesson that I'm always sharing, especially with the students that I work with, is like, don't be afraid to, you know, and I don't know if you jumped on Zoom with them or whatever, but have a conversation with your customers, especially the ones who are quote unquote your ideal people to learn. Like you just said, hey, you know, thanks for buying so much. I'm just curious what you do. Like gives you invaluable insight. So
now we actually kind of have that automated a little bit in the post-purchase sequence for email. We have them fill out a survey. And one of the questions is, are you a business? Are you an event or wedding planner? And they pre-filter out themselves. And then for those people, we have an email that says, hey, I'd like to set up a call. Let's talk.
That's great.
Yeah.
Just curious, what kind of percentage you get to fill out that short questionnaire?
The survey?
Yeah.
I would say it's like high single digits.
Yeah.
Percentage wise.
Yeah. And that's it's great perspective because so many people are like, oh, I only had, you know, whatever, this many people fill out the, you know, survey or what have you, but that's reality. Like that's like perspective, like that's kind of normal, right? So that's really, really smart what you're doing there. Now,
I was just going to say, sorry, on the survey thing, if you want to get them to fill it out more, you give them an incentive up front. Like you fill this out, you get a 10% off coupon or a $10 gift card. That will greatly boost it.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's different ways you can do that, like to incentivize them. It doesn't always have to be, you know, like e-com. Yeah. But if someone's not e-com, it doesn't have to be like, oh, I'll give you 15 minutes of my time. It doesn't have to be, you know,
sure.
It might be like a Starbucks gift card or something like that. I'll buy your next coffee or what have you.
Yep.
So the book's called The Family First Entrepreneur. And I really want to talk on so many different levels about this. As I talked about why or one thing that was affecting me greatly prior to deciding to take a sabbatical was my time with Maya, my daughter, who's 4, and my time with Amy, my wife. Like, you know, I would find myself getting very short with Maya, for example, and I would just be, you know, she knew something was wrong and my mind would be in other, you know, a million other places when I was at the playground with her just up the block, or, you know, we're playing Peppa Pig or Bluey or whatever it was. And that's not, you know, the kind of father that I want to be, where I'm never present emotionally and mentally with her. And then with Amy, like we'd be talking and I'd have like brain fog, or my brain would be somewhere else too. And I wasn't able to focus on her. Again, another example of where I wasn't, you know, being present. And as I was trying to figure out what was going on, I was like, well, wait a minute. I only work, quote, only work like 25 hours a week. And so, but I was like, I felt like I was going still and not able to shut off in the evening and all this other stuff. And so those are big, you know, contributing factors to making the decision to take some time off, so that when you and I connected about this book, I was like, us, great timing, right? Like this topic, I think, is so important because, I mean, at the very beginning, you just shared all the things that you're doing and you have 2 teenagers and your businesses are really successful. And so what are you talking about specifically in the book? I mean, obviously the Family First Entrepreneur,
yep,
can tell a lot from that title, but why did you write the book?
I wrote the book because I feel like most of the entrepreneurship advice out there today is wrong or doesn't apply to me, because it's written by single dudes who have no responsibilities except for work, right? And everywhere I go, I see people just preaching that you got to hustle, you got to work 80 hours a week. And that doesn't apply to me, right? Because I want to spend time with my family. And so I wrote the book to just teach people that it doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to work 80 hours a week. You don't have to hustle your butt off just to get ahead. Most of us who start businesses, and I'll ask you this question too, Rick, we do it just for freedom, really, right?
Yep.
We're not trying to start the next $100 million company or next billion-dollar company. We just want to spend time with our loved ones and just have a little bit of freedom.
Yep.
And if that's what you want, then it can be easily achieved. You just have to set boundaries.
When you say, so somebody listening right now can be like, okay, that's all well and good, but fill in the blank, and there's a whole list of things that
sure
come up in their head, like, oh, I can't do that, or wait a minute, how am I going to market myself? How am I going to attract people into the business and all this other stuff when, you know, I'm a mom or I'm a dad or whatever it might be, and I have all these other, you know, I have no energy and I have all these other responsibilities and so forth. What are your thoughts when people come up with those sort of thoughts?
Yeah. So those just sound like excuses to me, just to be frank. Like at the peak, I was running 2 7-figure businesses. I was working a full-time job as an engineering director, and I was the father of 2 kids. And if you really want something, you can make it work. Now, that during those conditions before I quit, they weren't perfect because I was still working nights.
Mm-hmm.
And weekends for that. But, you know, now that I've quit that job, I work about 20 hours a week. I still run the 2 7-figure businesses. And my whole afternoon, and Rick, you'll get to this point with your kids, but my afternoons are literally just driving, driving them around, taking the activities, coaching their teams and that sort of thing. So I actually don't even have time to work more than the amount that I work, unless I want to sacrifice like the coaching or whatnot.
Sure.
So your original question was, how can people do this? And especially around now, like we're in a recession right now, right? People are losing their jobs left and right. I have friends who've lost their jobs around here. And it's really hard to find another job when there's so many people looking for a job at the same time.
Yeah.
And more than ever, I feel like everyone needs to just have something on the side, right? Doesn't have to be huge. You just need to have some options. Because some of those can maybe someday turn into something that can make significant money. Like just to give you an example on our handkerchief store, we started that store because my wife wanted to quit and stay at home with the kids. And our goal with that business was like, hey, if it can make $5,000 a month, that's good enough. We're good. And it wasn't a whole lot of work early on because we weren't getting that many orders.
Yeah.
And now it's a 7-figure business, right? It's just something that you do on the side. And this is what I recommend. If you can do something, I always recommend that people don't choose what they're passionate about because just kind of passions change over time.
Sure.
But if you've been working for a while, chances you have skills that you use all the time. And so just start something, you know, with what you're good at already or that you have knowledge in.
Do you take people through this type of process or what have you in the book?
I do. Yeah. In fact, there's a whole chapter on just implementation and brainstorming.
Mm-hmm.
And I throw out a bunch of examples. Like, so in the book, I talk about, keep it simple. Just try to earn $1,000 in 90 days. And when you talk to someone who's never started a business, that actually seems pretty insurmountable, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's a way that you can do it that makes it really achievable. So let's just throw some examples. Do you want to go down this path? I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
Go down
sure.
With this episode.
Totally.
All right. So let's look at my skill set right now. Let's say I don't teach e-com. I don't run a store or nothing. Prior to any of this, I was pretty good with Photoshop, right? And so, you know, one of the funny things I used to do is I used to superimpose other people's heads on other people's bodies and, you know, just for fun, right? Mm-hmm. But I, you know, as I got into e-commerce, I found that people on Amazon, they really need to have their product on a white background. Mm. But you know, you don't usually take photos like that. So if I wanted to make $1,000 in 90 days, I might put together a quick and dirty tutorial on how people can put their images on a white background. I just find out where these Amazon sellers hang out, maybe just look on Facebook. There's a tons of groups for everything that you can think of. And just say, hey, I know you guys are Amazon sellers. I thought this video might be helpful. Ingratiate yourself into that community. And then maybe say, hey, you know, I have some other tutorials I can help out and make your product photos pop. Sign up for my email list. And maybe I might turn those into a course or a class of some sort. I might do consulting. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, selling your time is an easy way to just make some extra cash also.
Sure.
And just take it from there.
So I just posted in our accelerator group. I said, you know, when it comes down to it, business is easy. The core of business is easy, right? You have some form of expertise. And your example that you just used, it's Photoshop. And there's a problem that you can solve with that expertise. You mentioned like the white backgrounds. And then there are people that need the help of, you know, with the expertise that you provide. And you just mentioned like Amazon sellers. Okay, now we need to get in front of them. And so it just, and you just listed it right out there. And when it really is, when you bring it down to it, I don't want to oversimplify it, but it really is like that. The core of what we're doing as business owners or somebody starting a business is as simple as, all right, I have an expertise. These are the type of people I want to help. This is the problem I'm helping them with. Where are they? What's my messaging? What do I actually do for them? Et cetera.
I mean, I think fundamentally it's easy. I think the hard part is not getting carried away with it and having it consume your life personally.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, you mentioned boundaries earlier. Now, I think that as I mentioned this in my podcast episode here where I talk about the sabbatical, and I said, I think one of the big reasons why that contributed to the burnout was that I didn't set very good boundaries for myself. And what I mean by that is like from an emotional level, I just put my everything into, when I'm working with somebody, I put my everything into it and I take a lot of that onto my shoulders. And so, which is going past a self boundary that I need to have, if that makes sense. Now,
yeah,
when you're talking about boundaries, as far as when you have a family or you're starting something or it's a side hustle, what have you, what types of boundaries are you talking about there?
Yeah, so I think it starts with understanding a couple things. So have you heard of the four burners theory, Rick?
No, I haven't.
The four burners theory states that your life is composed of four burners: family, friends, health, and work. And in order to be really good at one thing, you have to turn off at least one burner. If you want to be really good at something, you have to turn off two. And if you're Elon Musk, you turn off three and the work burner is all you got.
Mm.
Right? So basically what this is about, it's about trade-offs and priorities, right? You can't do it all, right? So if you want to be really good at work, you got to turn down some of your other burners. So it's really just figuring out what your boundaries are and what your priorities are. So family and health are probably my top two.
Yep.
And so if I want to, work and health are kind of tied, something like that. But basically, if I want to turn up the work burner, something else has got to go down. So usually I turn down the friends burner, for example.
Yep.
It's not that I neglect them or anything, but you know, I know that, you know, if I don't talk to them for a while, they're still going to be friends and that sort of thing.
Sure.
So that's the first part of it, understanding that you can't do it all.
Yeah.
The second part of it with the boundaries is a little harder. And I can just only talk about my own experiences here. Like I have an ego when it comes to business. And part of that problem lies with the fact that I'm a part of these mastermind groups where I hear about these people that are just making millions of dollars. And when I hear stuff like that, I was like, I want to do that. I want to be able to have like $1 million launch or whatever.
Yeah.
And that makes me work a little bit harder and go beyond and forget why I started the businesses in the first place.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not sure if this has ever happened to you, Rick. So for me, it's been about quelling that ego, right?
Yep.
I belong to this group from Stanford. It's called the Mayfield Fellows Group. And that group was originally founded. It's sponsored by the venture capitalist firm Mayfield Fund, where it's designed to make you join a venture-backed startup and eventually exit for millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. Anyway, every year we had this retreat and we share what we've been up to. And like everyone's like, oh yeah, I just had a $400 million exit. Kevin Systrom of Instagram is part of that group.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes to me and I'm like, still selling hankies. still blogging. It hurts my ego.
Yeah.
You know? So the way I quell my ego today is, one, I have no revenue goals anymore because it's pointless. I don't spend that much money. Like, I'm very frugal.
Yeah.
And I already make way more than I spend. So part of it is figuring out how much you need just to live.
Yep.
And then paying yourself that and just treating everything else like gravy.
Yep.
And the second thing is you need to keep your mind active, right? To quell that ego. So every year I just focus on one thing. This year it's the year of the book. So all my energies go towards marketing the book. Last year it was YouTube and I managed to hit 200K subs. The year before that it was TikTok. The year before that, I think it was Google Performance Max ads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just every year I just do one thing. And as long as I'm learning, that's been able to quell my ego.
Yeah. So you mentioned like you're compare yourself to other, you know, like these huge launches or big access or what have you.
Yeah.
And this point that you bring up is something that I think is so important. And I talk about it quite a bit here in the show where, as you know, in the online space, it's the sort of the level that everybody's shooting for is that seven figure mark, that $1 million yep. mark, right? And like, yep. I did it. I talk about it all the time. I was shooting for it too, because I figured like I've made it, quote unquote, when I hit seven figures. And then when I hit it in the first 4 years, which I'm super grateful for, and I don't minimize that, but I remember hitting it and I'm like, okay, what, like now what, you know? And when, I mean, you know, you talk to people and about their business. And if you say like, hey, what are you trying to do? What's your goal? And like, oh, I want to hit $1 million, I want to do seven figures.
Yep.
Whenever I hear that from people, I'm like, okay, great. Why? What's the why behind that? Right.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, it is because, you know, this is what I will know, I'm an expert at that point, or I will know I've made it at that point. And I've been talking a lot more about this recently, where why not redefine what that success looks like to you in terms of just like you just said, Steve, it's like, all right, how much money do I need to live? And maybe you're adding on a little bit more because you want to, I don't know, whatever. And you're investing or saving for whatever. And like, what if that's the goal? And what if that goal is $100,000 or $50,000 or 400, whatever it might be? Now there's meaning behind that goal. And I think that not only does it start to shift people's perspective, but it's also hard, I think, for people to wrap their head around, because it's been so ingrained and talked about in the online space for years and years and years, this whole seven-figure level. What are your thoughts on that?
Let me tell you something, Rick, and you've probably had more people on your podcast than I have as guests. I once had this guy on, he hit $2 million in 6 months, and the whole episode we were talking about how he did it and like cheering him on and everything. I hit the record button, the stop button, and I was like, dude, how painful is that? It must have been really horrible. He's like, oh man, I was so stressed out, burned out during that time. It was not fun.
Mm.
And I wish I had that part on the recording, because those are the stories that most people don't hear about.
Yeah.
I was in a mastermind group once where one of the guys wanted to hit seven figures, just so you were just talking about, but he was making a healthy six-figure profit with like one person on his team, but he really wanted to hit seven figures. So he expanded his team. He hired like 15 people. And he managed to hit seven figures, but when he looked at his profit number, it was actually less than he made without the team.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he's like managing all these people that he doesn't want to be doing either. So
right.
You don't hear about those stories either publicly.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's so true. Like, would you rather have, you know, $200,000 business where your profit margin is super high, or would you rather have $1 million business where your profit margin maybe isn't as high? It's so good for, I'm so glad you bring that up, because it's something that the perspective is not talked about enough. So
it is not. I mean, I would say, I know for me, ego has always been that problem, just because I hang out with so many successful people, right? It's tough.
Yeah.
So for me, ego is always the problem, not necessarily the time or the mindset, but once I let me just tell you the backstory. What ended up happening is we hit $1 million in our business, and I was so excited, and I just kept moving the flagpole. Like, okay, great. Let's grow another 30% next year. And then finally my wife broke down and she said, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm burned out. What is the point of doing all this? And that's when we started making changes. That's when we stopped the revenue goals. That's when we just took a step back. Because growing fast is actually very painful. It's not fun.
Yeah.
And that's what most people don't realize.
Yeah. So what can people expect with the book? You know, we've talked about a lot of what is pretty prevalent in the online space, but I love how you talked about, you know, people are losing their job and you know, creating something for themselves. What can people expect as they open up the book and start going through it?
So the book is divided into two parts. The first part is really for those people who don't have a side hustle yet and just getting them to start one and getting the courage to find something and start it. The second part of the book is about systems and automation and how to not let the business consume you. We can talk about the latter half of the book if you want.
I was just going to say, my audience loves that conversation as much as I do. So yeah, let's chat about that.
I'll just give you like a little nugget. For example, for my business, I don't focus on social media that much. And the reason why is because my friends who do it well, Instagram and Facebook, my friend who does Instagram well posts 7 times a day. My friend who does Facebook well posts 21 times a day. And when they stop posting, that traffic goes away. Right? So I think of social media as kind of like a hamster wheel. So I focus on things where I can do it once and get the traffic for a long time. So for example, SEO, I have a post that I wrote 10 years ago, still generates a ton of traffic. I have YouTube videos that I filmed 3 years ago, still generate me email subs and traffic every single day. So I tend to focus on those properties.
I'm so glad.
It's just one example.
So glad you bring that up because, and you've been podcasting for a while also. Mm-hmm. Same sort of thing, like 453 episodes, somebody can go back and listen to number 27 or whatever and get a lot of value from it.
You know,
as people do, as looking through and saying, ooh, I like that topic right there. I really want to listen to that episode, but it's something that you did several years ago. And I also want to point out to everybody listening right now, this is, you know, I've done an episode about you do not need social media in order to have a successful business.
Oh, really? You
did? I did.
Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, you're a perfect example, Steve. Like I don't do hardly any either. And what I see is a lot of people feel that pressure of needing to do social media because that's what they keep hearing. And I love how you it's a hamster wheel. And when you stop doing it, the return on that will likely stop as well. So, all right, what's another automation or systems and process that?
So this one's a little bit more controversial, but I don't like employees. I prefer automation over employees. So one of my businesses, my wife quit her job and makes $1 million in profit. I just have one VA in the Philippines. That's it. And this is part of the reason. I used to be an engineering director. I had a team and they were great at working. But what I found is like, you have to deal with a lot of issues. What most people don't realize is that when you have a lot of people under you, there's like an overhead of just keeping them interested, keeping them motivated and that sort of thing. And that ends up being quite a bit of work.
Yeah.
So I don't want a big team ever. And I'm of the opinion, and you can correct me, give me your opinion, Rick. If all you want to do is make a couple million bucks, you don't need a large team. If you want to start like the next Facebook or whatever, then you need a team. But just to make a good living and spend time with your family, you definitely don't.
So I know that people are listening right now and they're like, wait a minute, $1 million profit in my wife quit her job business with one Filipina assistant. Well, let's break that down for a second.
Sure. Yeah. So that particular business, my wife quit her job, is all about content. And content is probably the most scalable business that you can create. So I mentioned the blog posts, right? Those rank in search and the YouTube videos just generate traffic. I guide them to an email list and I always try to grab an email and an SMS list. And my email list goes into, I get people into what I call my 6-day mini course that teaches them how to start selling online.
Mm-hmm.
And that feeds into my full blown class. I'm sure you have something similar, Rick. And it's just this nice automated cycle where I'm just getting sales of my classes. And as part of the class, I also refer out products where I get a cut of the sale as well.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it just kind of comes in without a whole lot of upkeep.
So what is the assistant doing?
The assistant is the person who's editing my podcasts editing my videos, and she actually helps me deal with my email load as well.
But everything else is automated.
Everything else is pretty much automated. So I can break down my 20 hours for you if you guys want. I finish all my content creation on Mondays. So I post 2 YouTube videos a week and I post 1 blog post a week. I do have writers. I don't consider them employees. They're kind of like contract writers, but you can call them employees if you want. So even on the content side, I have a system down where, well, let's just talk about YouTube, because video is like probably the most intimidating thing that you can do, right?
Sure.
Prior to me starting my channel, I was very intimidated to YouTube, which is why I didn't do it for many, many years.
Yeah.
Because it would take 20 minutes to set up the light and then editing the video and all that stuff. So before I committed to starting that channel, what I did was I filmed a video and I edited it and I recorded myself editing it.
Ah.
And then I just turned that over to, I looked for a video editor in the Philippines and I turned over that video and we kind of iterated on these videos. I didn't publish anything on YouTube yet. And then I filmed a bunch of videos and just kind of ironed down that system between the editing and whatnot. And so when I was ready to launch, I had a couple of videos in the bank. And then now I have the system where all I got to do is record and I just throw it overboard to the editor and it comes out perfect. So I can literally do a YouTube video now in like 20 minutes. So it's all about systems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know how, I'm just curious, did you know how to edit when you, when you were recording yourself editing, were you a good?
So what I did was I edited my first one and I just kind of figured out what I wanted. And that first episode probably took me like a day to edit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just to be clear. And then when it came time to filming, I already had the system down. So on the second video, I just filmed myself editing and I just kind of narrated what I like, where I, you know, want the jump cuts and that sort of thing. And that's what I turned over.
I think that the, what a lot of people don't want to do is that upfront work of recording themselves doing it, because, you know, they have this whole, you know, we all do, like, I can just do it myself. So much easier to do that. What would you say to somebody who's like, well, this is only going to take me a few minutes to do it because I know exactly how to do it. And it would take me all this time to explain what I need done to somebody, you know, on the team or what have you.
Yeah. So I have different opinions on this. So if they really enjoy doing that in the first couple of minutes, I would say keep going. Like, I generally don't try to hire someone until it becomes painful, actually. So if you enjoy doing it, great. I did not like video editing. I did not like podcast editing.
Yeah.
And there's one point that I forgot to mention. I didn't actually launch my YouTube channel until I had the editor and everything in place. Because I know that if I launched a channel with me editing it, I would have, there's this pressure to post like every week, right?
Yeah.
I would have burned myself out and probably would have stopped had I not had everything in place.
Yeah.
So I'm a believer in having the system in place before you actually even launch.
And just curious, when you, it's such a good point that you did it yourself, you recorded yourself doing it. And then I'm assuming that you said that you found an editor. So it wasn't somebody who didn't know video editing. It was somebody who actually knew video editing.
Correct.
So they can elevate what you were doing. They can kind of get a gauge of like, oh, okay, I see what Steve's wanting there and doing. And they use their own expertise to kind of elevate that.
And I think this is what people don't realize also, is that there's labor overseas that's very good, amazingly skilled labor, like in the Philippines, for example, that you can hire for a fraction of the cost of in the US. And let me tell you, my employees that I've worked with in the Philippines, they've been better than the people I've been able to find locally. And I don't know if it's cultural, but the attitude's just different. Like, they want to do a really good job and go beyond because they want to please you. And maybe it has something to do with the Asian culture. I don't know, but I've just had really good luck with everyone I've worked with.
Yeah. I have 2 full-time Filipino assistants and they are just the most amazing. They're so great.
Yeah.
So first half of the book, starting a side hustle. Second half is more about what we're talking about here is the systems and processes and really how to accomplish scaling your business to whatever you want it to scale it to without, you know, getting in the way of what is most important in terms of family and the life that you want to live.
Yeah. I mean, I go into a lot more of the automation stuff.
Sure.
A lot of it has to do with email, SMS, I mean, one thing that I really believe in also is selling more to your existing customers. We had that example earlier about, you know, finding those event and wedding planners. There's more to it, obviously. Here's the thing. Most people always focus on customer acquisition, and you teach Facebook ads, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know that acquiring a customer is pretty expensive.
Yep.
On the e-com side, if you're getting a 2x return on ad spend, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
On the e-com side. Whereas if you're selling to people who already trust you and already open up their wallets for you, it's so much easier to sell to them.
Sure.
And those people provide a solid base so that when you're getting new customers, you're just kind of building up that solid base of customers. And it's basically how to leverage those repeat customers.
Are you reselling to on the my wife quit her job side in that business? Are you reselling to them?
Yeah. So I have two products on the my wife quit her job side, mm-hmm. and I have a ton of affiliate products. So people in one class, I might introduce them to another class, or I'll just talk about tools that I use,
yep.
which leads to revenue as well. So it's similar on the info side as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. Where can people kind of get this book? Because this is something that, like I mentioned, the message is so important and very timely, like on a personal level. And I, you know, it's this, I don't want people sacrificing. You know, I always talk about build your business around your life, not the other way around. And what you're doing here is almost like a blueprint for doing these things. Whether somebody's just starting out or they already have an existing business, how to make that more efficient to free up time. And I'd love to get your comment here as we wrap up. Like, I think what's most important is when people are able to free up that time doing the types of things that you're teaching in the book, it's what they do with that time. Rather than, like you mentioned before, like, oh, I can do this now. I can add this to the, because like I've freed up this time in the business, I can start doing this stuff. But right, it's like making that decision of what to do with that time now.
And this is why I only do one thing every year, to be honest with you, because it's really easy to get caught up in a bunch of different things. And what ends up happening, you do a bunch of different things, you don't do anything well,
yep. right?
You don't do any one thing well. And as long as you stick to that discipline, I mean, another one of my philosophies is I won't even start anything unless I could commit to it for at least 2 to 3 years, usually longer than that even. And I don't start anything until I have like a piece of my schedule that I can dedicate to that. Like the YouTube channel, for example,
yeah.
like I didn't have 6 hours to dedicate to a video,
right.
but once I found the editor, I got 30 minutes. So I'll pencil that in on Monday.
Yeah.
And then I can maintain that forever.
Yeah. We could talk forever about that. I love it. Where can people get the book?
Yeah. So the book, the best way is to actually go to thefamilyfirstentrepreneur.com.
Okay.
And the reason why I want you guys to go there is because I'm offering these amazing bonuses for ordering the book. I'm giving away a 3-day workshop on how to get started with e-commerce and specifically print on demand. The reason why I chose print on demand is because it costs practically no money to start. And it's kind of like a gateway drug to running an e-commerce store. Like my 9 and 11 year old kids started an e-commerce store with print on demand, selling entrepreneurial t-shirts, and they made $1,000 in their first month.
And so
my little kids can do it, so can you. I also have a 2-day workshop on content. So in that 2-day workshop, I talk about blogging, podcasting, and YouTube, if you want to go into that business. And then I'm also doing this 6-week, what I call a family first challenge. And that one's going to be interactive. I'm going to be in a Facebook group and help you guys find out what your next side hustle is going to be.
Nice.
And you get all those bonuses just for pre-ordering the book. And you can get the book anywhere. It's available everywhere. Amazon, Barnes and Nobles, whatnot.
Gotcha. But best way to get all these bonuses that you just mentioned, thefamilyfirstentrepreneur.com.
That's correct.
Awesome. I'll link the book up in the show notes, obviously. And I'll also link up other, like how to connect with, where else can people connect with you, Steve?
Easiest way is just go over to mywifequitherjob.com.
Okay.
Sign up for my free 6-day mini course if you want to check it out.
Yep.
It's a group of lessons if you want to learn how to sell online. And if you guys ever want to meet up in person, go to sellersummit.com. It's an event that I've been running for the last 7 years. Oh, and I forgot, if you guys are getting married, I'll hook you up with some hankies over at Bumbleby.
Bonus. Yeah. Awesome. Steve, thanks, my man, for coming on here. It's so great to catch up with you and talk about this. Like I mentioned, this is such an important topic. And thanks for writing a book about this. It's thefamilyfirstentrepreneur.com. Everybody go pick up a copy. Go to that site to get all the bonuses and stuff that Steve just mentioned. And thanks so much, Steve. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rick. Appreciate it.
All right. Hope you enjoy that conversation here with Steve. I'll link up the book and his other websites over on my show notes page for today's episode, which is at rickmulready.com. And just go to the podcast section. You'll see my episode with Steve right there. Also, real quick, if you have not yet left a quick rating and review for the show over on Apple Podcasts, it's still a really big help for the show to support it. It takes like 10 seconds to do. And also make sure to subscribe to the podcast so that you don't miss any episodes. If you are listening like on Spotify or whatever, you click that follow button so that you don't miss any episodes. Thank you, as always, my friend, for listening to today. I appreciate you. Until next time, be well, and I'll chat with you soon.
Do you want to avoid the 7 biggest mistakes that burn through course creators' ad money? I see these over and over and over again, and I put them together in a mini email series. This is not fluff. Each of the 7 mistakes, I also have a recorded video tutorial showing you inside of Facebook Ad Manager how to fix those mistakes. This is good, solid, and it will save you money or help you make more money with your Facebook ads. Click down in the show notes below. You'll see the link, and you can go download it right now for free.